So I brought a couple of family heirlooms to show you. Most people, when they think of family heirlooms, you might think of, you know, jewelry or something. I really like old tools or things useful that was used in everyday life from my ancestors. These are two tools that were my grandpa's. This one here is an old measuring tape. Not that different from ours now, except you can't push a button to wind it up. There's a little windy thing here, and you can wind it up. And you can tell it's well used by him. He loved to build things and make things. And here's another one. I'm curious, anybody know what this is? A chalk line. Yeah, oh, good luck. And what else? This says chalk line, and it's another one. A plumb line. Wow, well done. For those of you that didn't know what it was, see, this pulls out here. And there's a little lock mechanism that I've discovered is a little bit harder to use. There, it locks, and then it hangs. Now, inside here is a bunch of chalk. That's what the pink stuff is. And you pull it out, and this string is covered in chalk. So if I were to hold it up against a piece of wood or something and snap it, it would make a very straight pink line that you could use to know how to measure something really straight, cut something really straight, I think. And then it locks as well so that you can dangle it like this. And when it becomes still, it's supposed to show you exactly what is vertical according to gravity, right? So you can, this is where my understanding falls short. Somehow you use this to tell if things are vertical, right? Anybody else have a better idea how you'd use this? Yeah, put it on a nail. You hang it. Oh. Thank you. I saw that online. Didn't totally know how it worked. Yeah, so if you want to make sure your wallpaper is straight, this is very handy, right? And you also need the wisdom to know how to use it, which is also helpful. But it also makes a big mess. And you wind it up like this. Yeah. Now, this is not a sermon about old tools, but actually this is, I was thinking about the Psalm series and where we are now in the midst of Psalms of Orientation. And these tools, I was looking over at them and they came to mind. You see, let me just back up a little bit. In our Psalm series, a few weeks ago, you may have been here or you may not have, but Mark told us a little bit of an overview of the Psalms. There's all different kinds of Psalms and there's different ways that we could have approached this series, and we are trying as we go along to explore different kinds of psalms that you will find in the Psalter. But we're following an organization by Walter Brueggemann, who's an Old Testament scholar, and he suggested that many of the psalms could be grouped in three categories: psalms of orientation, psalms of disorientation, and psalms of reorientation. And so far, we've been looking at psalms of orientation. 2 weeks ago, Aaron spoke from Psalm 1, which is a wisdom psalm and a Torah psalm. And this is a psalm that celebrates God's ordering of the world and the goodness of it. And Torah psalms are psalms that celebrate the goodness of God's instructions that have been given to us. And last week, Aaron spoke from Psalm 19, which is a creation psalm and another Torah. It speaks of Torah, God's law as well. And in the same way, it celebrates God's ordering, the way this world has been created for goodness and for life and flourishing. And it's a celebration of that as well as God's instructions. Now, the reason I brought this up is in many ways, I think orientation psalms are like a plumb line. There's something that's been passed down to us, like this tool was passed down from my grandpa. And there are ways that we can use to look at our world, to look at our life and see, how does it line up? How would I make things actually vertical, the way they were meant to be? So in many ways, orientation psalms are like a plumb line. Now, we may need to be taught how to use it, like I did. That's the goodness of this being passed down to us. But they carry truth or wisdom about the world, about who God is, about who we are. Now, the challenge is that sometimes, inevitably in our life, there are circumstances that come where we can't just quite get the plumb line to line up still, or things are so crooked or shaky that it's really hard to understand the way that we've oriented ourselves in the past just doesn't work. Those are seasons of disorientation. Now, the goodness of the Psalter is that it's not just all about things being really nice and well packaged. It also includes prayers for times when things are messy, when nothing no longer seems to make sense, when the wisdom that's been passed down to us just doesn't seem to work today. Those are the Psalms of disorientation. And next week, we're going to start into those. Allison's going to preach on a Psalm of Lamentation for us. And then we'll come further in the series to then how do we reorient in a new way. And those are Psalms of reorientation we'll look at. But today, we have one more Psalm of orientation, which we might call a Psalm of well-being. It's another kind of plumb line for us to look at our lives by and find places of orientation and well-being. In fact, I'd like us to read this together. It's a very simple psalm, which kind of reflects the simplicity of the contents in only three verses. So, would you read this simple psalm with me today? Psalm 131, a psalm of well-being.
My heart is not proud.
A beautiful, simple psalm that's kind of like the plumb line that was passed down to me. Something for us to look at our lives together with, to be held by. So I want to just walk through simply. There's kind of three parts to this psalm which really reflect the three verses. The first part of the psalm you see is this part that says, my heart is not proud. That's not speaking of confidence, but it's about arrogance or haughty. I don't concern myself with great matters or things too wonderful for me. So things beyond what I can control or do anything about, this is not what I'm obsessing about or have pride to think I can. And change or anxiety to worry about what I can control. So there's this statement of where the psalmist fits in the order of creation with God. Now, when I read this psalm, I immediately think of a story that I read about a man in the States, born into slavery, and when he was young, it was when slavery was outlawed. The man's name was George Washington Carver. Have any of you heard of this man before? So you may or may not have heard this story. George Washington Carver went on to be an incredible scientist. He was the first African-American, first of all, that taught in Iowa State University. And then he made a lot of important discoveries and contributions for agriculture, which I'll tell you about in a little bit. And in the end, he was also sought out for his wisdom and advice from both the president and even Gandhi, apparently, sought him out at one point or another. But George Washington Carver was a man of deep faith and science. He saw how they were integrated and could be celebrated together. And he was a man of deep prayer. And I read this story about his prayer life and his science, how they came together. Apparently later in life, he was sharing to a group of YMCA, I think, young people. And he shared about an experience he had in prayer. And first of all, here's a quote that he talks about his prayer life a little bit. All my life, here's what he says, I have risen regularly at 4 a.m. to go into the woods and to talk with God. That's where he reveals his secrets to me. When everyone else is asleep, I hear God best and I learn my plan. And here's a particular story that he shared with them about a particular time of prayer that he had. Maybe he was in the woods, as he says here, or maybe he was in his laboratory, like he is in those photos up there. And apparently, when he addressed God, he called God often Mr. Creator. So, these are his words. Years ago, I said, "Dear Mr. Creator, please tell me what the universe was made for." The Creator answered, "You want to know too much for that little mind of yours. Ask something more your size, little man. Now, no, of course, his mind, he was brilliant, okay? But I guess compared to the Creator, everything is always relative, right? Well, George Washington Carver didn't give up. He came back the next day and he said, okay, well, please, Mr. Creator, tell me what man, meaning humankind, is made for. And again, the Creator replied, you're still asking too much. Cut down on the extent and improve the intent. I love that phrasing. Well, he still didn't give up. He came back again, another time. And this time he says, please, Mr. Creator, will you tell me why the peanut was made? Little man, the Creator responded, now that question is just your size. Listen, and I will teach you. Well, George Washington Carver went on to discover 300 uses for the peanuts. There's a vast universe just in a peanut that he discovered and dedicated his life to, and more, which I'll tell you about in just a minute. But I love this story because it captures, I think, some of the essence of that verse that we just read. My heart is not proud or haughty, but it doesn't mean sticking his head in the ground either and ignoring the world. It's humbly accepting what is my piece in it, what am I called to in it. Again, it's not about ignoring the bigger picture or saying, well, I can't do anything about that, so I'm just going to turn my back on it. Interestingly, the peanut was quite significant for agriculture at that time. Many of the farmers after slavery, many of them African Americans that were trying to start to eke out a living on the land themselves, found that most of what was being farmed in that area was cotton, which was depleting the soil and the yield was going down year after year. So their ways to survive financially and nutritionally was continually going down. And George Washington Carver recommended crop rotation, and he discovered that planting legumes and peanuts actually put nutrients into the soil and made it rich and healthy again. But they needed to have uses for the peanuts if they were going to grow it, right? So his concentration in this small area actually was quite revolutionary and quite significant for the South in that particular time in farming, especially for the poorer farmers, to make it economically and nutritionally, and it revolutionized. And, of course, this was good for the earth, right? It was more caring for the land that has been for all of creations. A beautiful picture to me of the goodness of this approach with God. Our hearts is not too haughty. So what are we being called to? This, I think, is something to line our hearts, our lights up with, back like the plumb line. You know, is this message, does it line up with what we hear a lot in the world today? Is this consistent or is it off? I don't know about you, but I often find the world is telling me, you can do grand things. You can be the hero that saves the world. There's so much more out there, and there's maybe truth to that, but so often then we become the main agents of the change, and we're the ones that have to do the grand things. We're the ones that have to be the heroes. Whereas the psalmist, and I think George Washington Carver, understood that God is actually the hero in this, and we're invited to play a piece. What does it mean to approach that with humility? So then the second verse, I think, is connected to this. When our hearts are not too proud, when we understand where we fit in the big picture of things, it's an invitation then to come into a place of rest. When we're seeking after in arrogance that which is beyond us, when we're reaching out to control and anxiety, it's this place of freneticness. It keeps us from being still. And the counter image that we have, going back to our verse, is this. But instead of that, I have calmed myself and quieted myself. I am like a weaned child with its mother. Like a weaned child, I am content. You can almost see the plumb line just coming to stillness with that image, right? Now, there's a lot of parts of scripture that was written centuries and centuries ago that's hard for us to understand or access. If you don't know the culture of the day or you don't know the historical content in what it was written. But this psalm, I think, is one that just cuts across the ages, cuts across time and cultures. And this imagery of a weaned child quieting itself with a mother is one that we can understand today, just as we could have thousands of years ago or across the globe today. So instead of me unpacking it, I want to ask you all, because this is something everyone has some kind of experience. You've either watched this or you've experienced this yourself or you've held a child. What does this imagery imply to you? Like, what does it mean to be a weaned child being held with a mother, by a mother? Can any of you share any experiences or observation or what that speaks of to you?
It's like going back to the first thing that nourished
you. Going back to the first thing that nourished you. Other observations? So when the child is completely weaned, there's no longer this clamoring for the milk, but there's still this need to be held by the mother. Yeah, but it's a different kind of relationship. Yeah. Anything else? Any other observations or thoughts? Yes.
So it's like, I don't know. So it's like not just being the object anymore. You're a full person. I don't know. Maybe like moms who are like in the weaning phase, that like banging on your chest. Like, it's not. It doesn't feel always even like you're wanted because of being a whole person. It's just this liquid that comes from you. but when they're weaned, it's like that same holding comes in the context of like a full relationship.
Thank you. So beautiful. It's a shift of relationship, not just a using, in a sense, a utilitarian, but it's a fuller relationship with the mother and the child. Yeah, thanks. That's a helpful observation. It's an imagery of coming, and there's also a choice in this, if you notice this. I have calmed and quieted myself like a child. So there's this intentionality of kind of coming, perhaps, to be with the mother, to be held, to calming oneself, like allowing the plumb line to move into stillness. For this series, these are all songs that are sung, right? Originally, they were songs. So we had invited this week some of the worship leaders and some of the musicians to come together. So in the middle of the week, this week, we came together. Charlie did a little bit of teaching on how to write songs, and we gave them the psalms that we're going to be preaching from. And three of them, Nita, Christina, and Christina, wrote a song that went with this psalm. And so I'm going to get them to come up now and sing it. And partly because I feel this psalm, the song that they wrote, in many ways captures the essence of this second verse and the third verse. So rather than me speaking more, I'm going to invite you to just sit with the invitation that's here. To be calmed and to be held by the one who holds the whole world and who holds love for each of us. What would that be like? I'm going to invite them to express this in song. I just want to acknowledge one quick disclaimer. An image like this, for many, may be a gift, but for some of you, this may be an image that's challenging or painful. Perhaps you had a relationship with a parent that was not so comforting and inviting. And I just want to acknowledge that and say that too, your experience is also held in God's love and mercy in that. And then the other pieces, I also acknowledge in a community like this, there are folks who long to hold a child, perhaps, in this way, and you have not had a child. This, too, is the pain that you can bring into the embrace of God. So just want to acknowledge that as we enter into this kind of imagery.
Presence, O God. Like a mother, you bring rest to my soul. I leave all my worries behind. My soul is quiet in you. We choose to trust in you. We choose to wait on you. We choose to trust in you. We choose to wait on you. When I don't understand, I am your resting child. My soul is quiet in you. We choose to trust in you. We choose to wait on you. We choose to trust in you. We choose to wait on you. Now and forevermore. Now and forevermore. Now and forevermore. Now and forevermore.
I don't know, I'll speak for myself, but my first response was, I don't know how I could sing, my heart is not proud, I am not haughty, like, with conviction. That was my first response, because of course our hearts are complicated and we're on a journey and we're choosing this all the time. So that was our first way into it, was how to say this. So I am humbled, I leave these behind, help me not to demand, and I choose this. And so it was like a choosing of these things as a way into this rest. I struggled with, first I was kept thinking of the child needing the milk, that banging on the chest, and I kept thinking demand, 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 and what is that actually to that image of my children when they were finally okay with not needing me in that way. I love how you phrased it, that it's like a different relationship and you create a relationship connection, that's a bonding. And finally, it wasn't until after we presented it to the group that we realized how low the melody was, because we were just singing it, we just like made it up on the spot and it was like good to go, and then later realized how low it was, so we're going with that. But those who might want to sing it, feel free to change the key. But it kind of also is soothing and lulling in a way that a lullaby could be. And so just resting in that, not needing a lot of crescendos and a lot of builds, just letting it lull was kind of fitting, we thought.
And I think to your point, it was a reverse lullaby. So in the one part where we can actually hear God also singing to us, now and forevermore and amen, it was us being able to sing the lullaby to God in that I don't need demand from God, but also that, wow, we're at this point where we can actually, I hear you singing over me, God, but I'm also singing back to you in this intimate time.
It reminds me of Caleb recently saying how much he loved me and that I was a good mother. Like, it was just that kind of speaking back to me, this beautiful connection. It's not always like that. but he has his moments. As do I.
Wow, well, thank you guys. That was a lovely gift. So thank you for sharing that with us. And I think your song captures parts of this psalm that we might not have seen. And what they did in trying to write a song with that, I think, is an invitation for all of us. As we encounter this kind of a song of well-being, we may find at the time, oh yeah, this is how I feel. Or you might come at it and say, wow, I am not like that. My heart is haughty and proud. But then there, what they've done is kind of what we can do with psalms in prayer, is we can turn them into a prayer. God, I need you to help me in this humility. Or I don't feel trust, but I'm going to choose to trust in you. I'm going to choose to try to find a place of rest in you. So appreciate that engagement with that psalm there. Our psalm ends with a very simple verse, which I think is the invitation, really, of this psalm, which is, put your hope in God. Put your hope in God. We are not haughty or proud. Instead, we put our hope in God. We come to rest. We can find rest and that deeper relationship because our hope is in God. So I want to send you with that invitation today. Our world is not perfect. It's not problem-free. That's not what a psalm of well-being is about. There's still a lot of work to be done. But we find our way through it. We find places of rest and well-being because our hope is in God. Yesterday, I went to Muriel Mortimer's memorial service. Mary Dickow did the service and did a wonderful job holding that service, and different family members spoke. Muriel was a member at Grandview for decades. But I loved what her son said in his tribute to her. He described coming home. He said, one of my favorite memories was coming home after school, and my mom would meet us at the bus, and we'd go home. And when I got home, these were his words, everything is okay, mom is here, like in the home. And I thought, oh, that kind of captures, I think, the essence of this psalm. So my friends, there's still a lot of brokenness in our world, but I invite you into this place of being held, of being present with our loving Creator, our loving parent, to sit and be held. Everything is okay. Mom is here. Amen.